Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002 and goes out every Monday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week, a new album by Bristol band The Transpersonals. Also, slightly related, Aldous Huxley. We continue with our series of his talk from the early 1960s. Also, Bristol Free Shop. Open in the city centre. It's like a charity shop, but it's free. So we start this week by welcoming the Transpersonals. Three, they're Tim Herford, Luke Barter and Matty Bain. And before we talk to them, let's hear a track from their first album. It's Happy Holiday.
This is a vintage Rouge 50mm changing cylinder music box. Let's listen to this play.
Oh,
Well, you're listening to Happy Holiday from the new album by The Transpersonals. Joining me in the studio, Tim Herford, Luke Barter, Matty Bain. Hi, fellas.
Hello.
Hi, Tony.
Nice to have you here.
It's lovely to be here.
And it's a lovely bit of music. I think we'll just leave that chugging along.
Okay. Your friendly sound man just described it as the Beach Boys on horse tranquilizers, which I love.
Wish we'd thought of that.
And before, people have said that we sound like the Beatles on acid, and which I always point out the Beatles were on acid, you know? But maybe they meant that it's like listening to them.
Well, I think aren't there people in Liverpool who say, oh dear, once they started taking drugs, we liked them before then.
What do you mean, once they started?
Well, it didn't take them long to get going.
They just went from rum to amphetamines to weed to acid to...
So is music all about drugs? Is music all about drugs?
Well, music is a drug, if you think about it, because it's made of molecules, air molecules. You make a sound, the air molecules vibrate in the air. You take the drug through your ears. The air molecules hit your eardrums. Your brain turns that into music. You get an internal mood. It's a mood altering and mind altering substance made of air, man.
I mean, the music sounds a little bit kind of 60s, and you're sounding a bit 60s as well now.
Well, yeah.
So is that a deliberate...
I'll soon be in my 60s before we get anywhere.
is that a deliberate influence, Tim?
It's not deliberate on my part because obviously I wasn't around in the 60s, but it's
picking up on the 60s style music, maybe late 60s,
the
early
60s, 70s 60s style music, and also the 60s style of thinking, you know, that whole kind of liberation revolution that was taking place in the 60s that caught the world on fire.
But did it? Because, I mean, yes, they had a lot of... I mean, I'm thinking about sort of West Coast US, where it was very big. A lot of the so-called revolutionary music was being made. And in fact, wasn't there a band called Jefferson Airplane? I'm not sure if you know them or something. I followed. They had an album which was all about that kind of thing. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Gosh.
Matt?
Surrealistic Pillar.
No, it wasn't that one. No. Oh, gosh, the name of it. I will come back with you with that in a minute.
Okay.
But City on Rock and Roll.
Blows Against the Empire.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah,
right,
so yeah. They had that whole attitude of, look, there's this kind of edifice of military banking thing that's running the Vietnam War, as it was at the time. And they were, striking blows against the empire. So I wonder, do you think that they ever achieved anything with that? Because you look back on the 60s and it was a lot of dreaming, but not a lot of actual change.
Yeah, well, I think, like, at the time, people, like, get into the music when they're kids, and it's when they grow up, isn't it, that you start getting the changes?
Well, I got into that simply because I grew up at a time when my parents had records on vinyl from the 60s, left over from when they still listened to music. So as a kid growing up, and as an only child, I spent a lot of time isolating by myself, listening to the Beatles, and also the lot of 50s music, you know, it's like the raw energy that stoked the 60s came from, a lot of rock and roll and Chuck Berry and that kind of thing. But the 60s is an obvious place to start looking for where a lot of influences come from, with bands around today and music today, because it was just such an explosion of styles coming together at once, and you didn't have such a controlled, I don't think, machine around artists. It really was about the music and not the person. Do you know what I mean?
I think we're in a situation now where the whole of cultural industries, including things like book printing, newspapers, magazines, is very much... I mean, if I go into a supermarket or Smith's and look along the shelf of all the different magazines, they all kind of look the same, formulaic. Yeah. You know, there's nothing really to stand out about them, and they're all pandering to the highest person with the most money in their pocket. The idea is they're trying to appeal to them more as a conduit for the advertising that's going in there, rather than
One of the negative things I think happened, you know, going back to Elvis and things like that, you know, that the Beatles obviously kind of modelled their career on Elvis in a way that they wanted to go from as famous as they could. They wanted to end up in films, you know. So people mistake now, I think, being a successful musician with, or they they take their benchmark of how successful a musician is by how much of a celebrity they are, right? Or how much money they've made. They're mistaking musicians for celebrities. And what we are, what going back to the music is a drug thing. It's to me, it really is alchemy. It's I'm interested. I see myself as a chemist, as a renegade chemist, like, you know, somebody who was Dr. making
Jekyll.
Acid
Dr.
in the
Jekyll.
60s. Yeah, somebody who was making who might make chemicals that affect people's consciousness. Well, I'm making the same chemicals but out of sound, and that's my interest. I'm not really particularly interested anymore. I was once.
Okay, well, before we get off the 60s and that kind of different style of cultural industry that there was around then, what are your influences? Maybe you first, Matty. What maybe not the 60s necessarily, but, you know, where are your influences musically? And
I like reggae music. Psychedelic music, not necessarily just 60s psychedelic music.
Any bands that you might recommend? Because I see you're filming.
Give us
a lot of them. I don't know who the psychedelic bands
are. Well, anything. If it's got Lee Perry's name on it, buy it, basically. Production or performance or whatever. I like a lot of kind of modern well, not really psychedelic.
You like that sort of folk tinged.
Yeah, I mean, where'd you start? I like so many different things.
Give us some names of those.
Give us some names, yeah.
Like, Pentangle. Yeah. I'll throw some names at you. Yeah.
Throw some names.
I know that. Name them up. See, they had a few hits, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, they did.
Back in
the Moody Blues as well.
The Moody Blues I like. I mean, they're not particularly... well, they are well-known, but they're not... they've made some great records.
They're pretty out there, aren't they?
Again, that's another 60s group. Or sort of 70s.
Amazing. They were doing something incredible. I mean, the Moody Blues, for example, were just doing something completely new, completely different. And it wasn't as if the record companies were saying, oh dear, this is new, it's different, it's never going to sell. We're going to have to have something which was the same as last week, or the week before, or the year before. What about you, Luke? What about your influences?
At the moment, I'm listening... Like, this album's got sort of like 50s pop sort of vibe to it. Like, you know, like Mr. Sandman, that song. And it's also like a Serge Gainsbourg sort of vibe to it.
What is this album?
Background this music.
Are you talking about our album?
Yeah.
He's talking about our
album. By the Transpersonals.
Yeah, exactly. So you're influenced by us?
No.
Hey, Luke, were you there at the recording session?
Serge Gainsbourg.
Yeah, that's
influences
another one.
The band.
Okay.
Yeah,
tell us a bit about Serge Gainsbourg. I've heard the name, don't know anything about the guy.
French guy.
Well, he's a French sort of composer, artist.
He's dead now, isn't he?
But yeah, he's the
seducer of women.
Yeah. He's massive.
Lover
in
of fine wines.
Yeah.
He was massive in France, and he did tunes with Brigitte Bardot, didn't he? There's a film about him.
So he's an influence. Tim, what about you?
1950s rock and roll, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, people like Lee Dorsey, which is more kind of like funk soul stuff. But I went through the Beatles were the first thing that switched me on, you know, listening, going through their stuff. The Beatles have got to be in there. That's like all brand.
Well,
you've got to have
your
staple diet in there.
I was trying to not talk about 60s, but basically the Beatles is where it sort of
when I was a kid, hip hop was starting off, and I was really interested in the samples. So that got if you really
all the old soul,
you know,
tunes.
I love the way that the old nutritious music is constantly reworked through new stuff all the time and rearranged. I'm a big fan of sampling and even mashups, because you take two completely different cultural icons, say Bon Jovi and the Beatles, not that they're that different, but you know, you could take something, you could take hip hop and you could take pop, put it together and create this third thing that transcends the two, and the language of music brings that together.
Mm.
And I believe it to be the language of angels.
The whole sampling thing is quite good, isn't it? I mean, you get an iconic moment in a film, maybe an old black and white film or something. Mm. You feel somehow, I've got to capture that moment and stick it in the middle of a song. And it just, even though people may never have seen the film, it's still, there's some kind of images come in your mind with that sample. So I'm totally with you.
But because of the internet today, you can find one thing that really switches you on, really, really affects you on YouTube. And on the right-hand side, you can just spend all day clicking on the things that it's linked to by association.
And then when you put it in your album, they can find you almost immediately and sue you.
Where's my money?
Anyway.
But music itself, let's not forget music itself is, you know, to learn to play an instrument, once you've done that, you can delve into the actual realm of music yourself and influence yourself in a feedback loop.
Great. You know?
That's the magic.
The theme of this new album, is, what's it called? Because we've got some tracks here, but I'm not sure the name of the album.
It's called Background Music, as in background music, you know, music that's in the background.
In the lift or something?
Yeah, it evokes that image. But really what it means is that this was an idea that came about listening to a scientist called, I don't know really how you pronounce his name, but he's very famous.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And anyway, he was explaining that on a clip on YouTube that I was watching, that his favourite artist was Van Gogh, because he painted Starry Night, and the subject of that painting is the background. It's the sky, it's the universe, because there's a tree in there and there's a couple of things in the foreground, but he called it Starry Night, or whatever it was he called it. So really he's pointing at the bigger picture, and that is exactly really what I try to do with all of my songs. I'm trying to point at the mystery of the universe.
Well, let's hear another one now. This one's Secret Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Glad.
Songs called Secret Garden. The band is Transpersonals, and they're with me here on Dialect. Tim, let's go straight back to talk about, you know, influences and themes. What about, you know, you talked about the idea of music as a drug. If music is a drug, now I take that it might be, what is the purpose of it? If you're listening to it, what's it going to do? Is it really, you know, going to transform, and how, if so?
Well, the purpose of it for me is that it acts as a drug. I don't take drugs now. I have done in the past. It's the first drug, it's the first thing that ever changed reality to such an extent that I felt ecstatic, you know, as a child. When those records that I was talking about, those 1950s rock and roll records, when my dad put those on the record player, everything changed. I'd be the room transformed from quite a dull suburban living room into a secret party in my brain, which is what was, you know, just the lyrics in that track then. I would be up on my feet dancing around. So taking that into account, because it is air molecules vibrating, you know, and a drug is made of molecules, you know, a couple of atoms stuck together. The purpose would be to create music that has the highest impact possible for losing oneself in, create an environment of sound. And if you can add lyrics and poetry to that as well, that are symbolic, and you keep adding to this mystery.
I mean, it's a sort of language, music, isn't it? And it's one of those languages that you could play it to an Eskimo, and Eskimo is going to get the same.
You won't find musicians, right? When you are a musician and you get to know all the musicians, other musicians in your city and stuff like that, it is impossible, if you're a good musician, to be racist, homophobic, to have any of these type of prejudice, misogynistic, because everybody is involved, and you want to collaborate. You want to speak together. You want to come together, and you want to make music together.
It's all right for musicians to do that, but that's not the way the world works nowadays. The world works with big promoters, and it's a kind of formula. It's like a factory. What they'll do is they'll say, someone, you write good lyrics. Someone else here, you play bass guitar good.
Yeah.
And you go into the machine. Well, the machine starts churning, and out comes a song.
Yeah, well, they'll also put your icons in boxes as well, in order to put you in certain boxes. You know, they got the 12 to 14-year-old market, which is anything from Lady Gaga to Beyonce to Justin Bieber to One Direction and all these other artists that nobody... Well, anyway, blah, blah, blah. But
I mean, I saw this going on.
You don't have to mix up what's going on the TV with music.
Well, I mean, I saw this sort of thing going on at the BBC, the similar sort of transformation when I was there in the early 90s, where originally the whole thing had been set up where people would sit around and say, well, we want to do this. And then they draw up a budget as to how they would pay for it. Slowly but surely, it all turned into, well, we've got this amount of money and we're going to give you that amount, and you've got to do it all with the money. So it became a decision based on budgets rather than creativity and ideas. And the nice thing about the old days was, you know, you just basically found the budget to do it from one place or another. And if you didn't have the budget, well, you just had to wait a few months till the next budget round, until the budget came round. And this is, I think, is a big problem nowadays, is that there isn't finished films, for example, on TV. Just do not exist. You cannot go to a broadcaster and say, right, we've just made a film, will you show it? Because they won't. What you can say is, we've got an idea to make a film. And I mean, I'm twisting the point here from the music to the film a bit, okay. But what they'll say is, well, yes, we like that idea. Actually, thank you very much. You can be involved still, but we're going to have this person presenting it, this person producing it, and it's going to look like that. So it's no longer your idea. It's become a kind of postmodern transformation of what your idea might have been into what someone else has decided it should have been.
Well, we've had
we've come across that sort of thing with our music, haven't we?
We go into a studio, we've got our own space that we can record in.
Position, actually, because we can do everything in house.
And that's not come through money. That's come through making music, right? So I still have a day job. We all do. I'm gardening every day. Now, I'd rather being my own in the secret garden, gardening every day, with the freedom to record music with my fellow magicians, musicians, than try to pander to the totem, the greasy totem pole of trying once again to get on the telly and to get on. We've had Single of the Week on Radio 2. We're on a Mojo award-winning compilation album, you know. So there's two examples there where we've dipped our toes into that world, but you can become very, very distracted very quickly by becoming obsessed with trying to get further and further into the mainstream and completely lose the magic that you've already got, which is developing your own personal adventure through sound with your friends that you're sharing with an audience that find you because they're looking for it. I want people that are seeking us to find us. I don't want to try and go out there and advertise myself to everyone. People consistently mistake success for fame and money. And the logo of our band is, we don't have a lot of fame or money, but we sure have a lot of success. You know?
Also, Bristol as a place to work. Maybe you, Matty, or Luke, you know, what do you think of it as a, you know, is it a good place to be collaborating maybe with other bands, to socialise with other musicians? And
it's a good place for being creative in.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a lot of inspiration, like, from other people and that, and, like, you want to do, like, decent stuff because everyone else is, like, really good as well. But it can sort of...
Well, Matt's not just in the transpersonals. Matt plays the drums with Neville Staple as well.
He
gets out there a bit.
I wanted to say, I'm not actually from Bristol originally. I'm from Swindon, which is not far away. But the reason I came here was because of the musicians and the people and the creativity and the things that were happening in Bristol that kind of, like, I wanted to get involved with, you know.
Is that just a myth, or did you really feel...
No, like, I really... It's not a myth at all. It's a really... I mean, obviously, you probably don't see it if you're from here, but as an outsider coming into that world, it very much exists, you know, that kind of, like... That, you know, you can do whatever, any musical, whatever you're interested in, you can do.
And don't forget, there's a big community in Bristol, like where I live in St Paul's, and there's a real thriving culture there.
Maybe you could just let us know how to get hold of the new album, Background Music.
Send me a tweet, Matty Bain, and I'll send you a free copy.
Or find us on MySpace. Remember that?
Are you actually giving it away? Yeah, giving the album away.
It is going to go out on. We put our stuff out now through something called AWOL, which, you know, any musicians out there should know about that want to put out their stuff.
Artists Without a Label.
Yeah, a friend of ours that contacted us, you know, a fan of us, works for this company called AWOL. And you can put your stuff out there. You don't need a label, and it's a fantastic
idea. They put it on, like, Spotify and iTunes. And
Gets out there.
So it will be
Amazon. You can download it and all.
Oh, that's good. So you're going to one place that will then sort of all the main commercial places. They'll put it on there, but then they'll also
And they don't rip you off. And if you're not really that, if you just want to get your music out there, it's great. So it will be on iTunes and it will be on all that stuff.
Amazon will be making AWOL an offer.
They can. Yeah.
Hey guys, we like this idea. Can we?
But anybody can have any
spare million.
They take a big cut, though, don't they? iTunes and all that.
Yeah, I mean.
But they don't want this sort of thing being given away. It seems there's quite a lot of people. They want the big boys actually do want to see the music industry controlled a bit more.
Well, this is. See, we have emails from people who say to us, you know, from different countries, different cities around the world, that are almost like cult members that want the files to then distribute personally to their friends, and then they pass it on and they pass it on and everybody's...
I'd rather that was going on than trying to
get somewhere in on that frame, on that TV screen.
But it's good. No, I mean, if it's available in the normal places like Amazon and iTunes and things like that, people can pay for it. You're not going to complain,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, lovely to have you in, guys. You are the Transpersonals, Tim Herford, Luke Barter, Matty Bain, and we're going to finish with a song called There You Go.
Okay, well, this last song is really more about the music, because it's got a large psychedelic delayed guitar break in the middle, which is homage to some of those psychedelic bands we were talking about. And people can see us live mainly in Bristol. We like to play in Bristol.
We've got a gig on December 3rd at Mother's Ruin.
supporting
with a great band called
Altered Hours.
Altered Hours,
not Altered Images. Altered Hours.
Altered Hours.
So where is that?
Mother's Ruin. That's in town. Bristol. It's like by Saint.
Yeah, what's the name of the road?
St. Nicholas Market.
Yeah, by St. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, let's see you now.
Mother's Ruin, yeah.
December 3rd.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
And that was There You Go by the Transpersonals. You can find them Transpersonals YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/user/transpersonals, or you can follow Matty, that is at Matty Bain, MattyBane, on Twitter. That's Matty Bain on Twitter.
Bristol Community FM 93.2. Your voice, your choice.
And in a similar theme, we're now going to rejoin an interview which we've done and been doing over the last couple of months, which is Aldous Huxley. Now, Aldous Huxley is an author. In the 1930s, he wrote a book called Brave New World, which is rather similar to George Orwell's 1984, a dystopia novel. We're going to go to his talk that he did in 1962 now at Berkeley, California, at the university over there. And the talk was called The Ultimate Revolution, about the scientific dictatorship which he saw looming in the future, called by many the technocracy. No democracy, just the people who control the technology controlling us and the controlling oligarchy. And he starts this week by talking about hypnosis.
One of the things we now know for certain is that there is, of course, an enormous, I mean, this has been always known, a very great difference between individuals in regard to their suggestibility. But we now, I think, know pretty clearly the sort of statistical structure of a population in regard to its suggestibility. It's very interesting when you look at the findings in different fields. I mean, in the field of hypnosis, in the field of administering placebos, for example, in the field of general suggestion in states of drowsiness or of light sleep, you will find the same sorts of orders of magnitude continually cropping up. You will find, for example, that the experienced hypnotists will tell one that the number of people, the percentage of people who can be hypnotized with the utmost facility, just like that, is about 20%. That about a corresponding number at the other end of the scale are very, very difficult or almost impossible to hypnotize, and that in between there lies a large mass of people who can, with more or less difficulty, be hypnotized, they can gradually be, if you work hard enough at it, be got into the hypnotic state. And in the same way, one... the same sort of figures crop up again, for example, in relation to the administration of placebos. A big experiment was carried out 3 or 4 years ago in the General Hospital in Boston on post-operative cases where several hundred men and women suffering comparable kinds of pain after serious operations were given injections whenever they asked for them, whenever the pain got bad, and the injections 50% of the time were of morphine and 50% of the time were of distilled water. And about 20% of those who went through the experiment, about 20% of them got just as much relief from the distilled water as from the morphine. About 20% got no relief from the distilled water, and in between were those who got some relief or got relief occasionally. So here again we see the same sort of distribution. And similarly with regard to what in Brave New World I called hypnopedia, which is the sleep teaching, I was talking not long ago to a man who manufactures records which people can listen to during the light part of sleep. I mean, these are records for getting rich, for sexual satisfaction, for confidence in salesmanship, and so on. And he said it's very interesting that these records are sold on a money-back basis, and he says that there is regularly between 15 and 20% of people who write indignantly saying the records don't work at all, and he sends the money back at once. There are, on the other hand, there are somewhat over 20% who write enthusiastically, saying they're now much richer, their sexual life is much better, etc., etc. And these, of course, are the dream clients, and they buy more of these records. And then in between are those who complain they're not getting much results, and they have to have letters written to them saying, well, go persist, my dear, go on, and you will get there. And they generally... they generally do get results in the long run. Well, as I say, this... on the basis of this, I think we see quite clearly that the human populations can be categorized according to their suggestibility fairly clearly. I suspect very strongly that this 20% is the same in all these cases. And I suspect also that it would not be at all difficult to recognize in very early childhood who were those who were extremely suggestible, who were those who were extremely unsuggestible, and who were those who occupied the intermediate space. Quite clearly, if everybody were extremely unsuggestible, organized society would be quite impossible.
That was Aldous Huxley, the author of Brave New World and The Doors of Perception and other books. He died in 1963, and that talk was given in Berkeley, California, 1962, just a year before he died. The talk entitled The Ultimate Revolution, and we'll have more of that in future weeks.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
And now we're joined by Irina Bondaruk from The Free Shop in Bristol City Centre. Hi, Irina, and welcome to Dialect.
Hi, Tony.
Now, yes, you came on before a few months ago talking about the Free Shop, but I understand that it's actually going to be open longer during the winter. Tell us, first of all, what is the Free Shop? What's the idea behind it?
Well, the Free Shop is a project dedicated to recycling, upcycling, swapping. It's a community-based shop which is made for community and... it is kept running by the community, which is great.
Now, if you're wondering what that noise is in the background, that's Margulis. Okay, so the Free Shop is a sort of charity shop of some kind, and you're looking for people either who need to have a sort of charity shop, things like clothes for free, and also people who have stuff to give.
Yeah, actually, formally, Free Shop is not really a charity shop, and charity shops... cannot actually even sell certain items like electrical stuff.
But you're not selling it, are you?
No, we're not selling anything. Free Shop is free, basically. This is the whole idea of it. It's more like a swap shop rather than the charity shop or a shop. It's not really a shop. You can just come and get
things. Okay, so this space looks like a shop, but it's not like a normal shop. Do you ever get people coming in and say, well, hang on a minute, how much is this? You must do.
Yeah, yeah. People ask all the time, really. Now it's actually been busier, and Free Shop is doing really well. We got lots of stuff donated, and people come and take stuff away.
Okay, so whereabouts are you?
At the moment, we are in the Arc Bar. On Broad Street in town centre. It's not far from Nelson Street and Cordon Street, just in the heart of town.
Right, so it's actually fairly easy to find. It's in a big central street. And you say it's in the Arc Bar, okay, that's Broad Street.
Yeah.
What hours is it open?
It was open Saturdays 1 till 4, and we're going to proceed with this day. But also, now Free Shop going to be open one more day a week, which is Friday, roughly the same time, 1 till 4.
Okay, so Fridays and Saturdays.
Fridays and Saturdays, 1 till 4. The community shop is open for everyone.
Okay, and are you looking for people to sort of drop stuff off, bags of stuff? What kind of things are most useful?
We are looking for people to donate stuff. We are also looking for people who actually will be coming and taking and using stuff. And also, at the moment, we are looking for some... maybe people who have artistic nature or just the beginners or people who like doing upcycling projects, because there is a really good platform. We can actually even provide with a workshop space now. And
well, hang on. You said upcycling twice now. What do you mean by upcycling?
Upcycling means reusing things, maybe not by exactly the same way, or just renewing things. It's very trendy nowadays to take an old furniture and make it... into shabby chic thingy.
Shabby
this
chic.
Is basically is upcycling as well. Or, for example, using old clothes for making carpets. Something unexpected.
Okay, and you've got, you say, workshop space where you can actually do that in the shop. So people are donating stuff and you look at it and you say, hey, we can shabby chic that. We can upcycle it.
Yeah, this is the idea behind it. Well, Free Shop is now kind of progressing and we want to make it more than just a platform for the swaps, for the shop, for the, as in shop.
Now, you're saying swapping.
But it's swapping. It's not exactly the swapping. It's kind of more like get rid of whatever you're not using, give it away, and take whatever you need to take. Also, we wanted to do a bit more of it. And the whole idea is that otherwise, the stuff which wouldn't be taken from the shop or brought to the shop, it probably would just get wasted, most of it.
Okay. Also, we're living in the austere times, austerity, a lot of people having to use food banks, the Department for Work and Pensions quite cruelly putting people on sanctions, that is to say where they're not getting any money at all. So have you found that quite a few of the people coming to the Free Shop are looking for, say, for example, you know, maybe a warm sweater for the winter, because obviously if you haven't got any money, you can't buy one.
Yeah, we have got a lot of warm jumpers. We also have blankets and sleeping bags, and we aim to help the poorest people, really. But also just people who don't like to see the stuff wasted, as I mentioned, and people who have handy hands and they like handworks. Maybe people who want to learn tailoring, for example, but it's quite expensive to go even to the scrap stores to get things, or once again buying things from the charity shop.
Okay, so the idea being that basically the things that are surplus are there for free rather than people having to pay for them. What's the idea behind it? Whereabouts have you come to as an individual who's got involved in this? Why?
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I think it could be even like with the once again people's conscious opening and people being more careful about. It's so easy nowadays actually to have too many things, and space is much more valuable. So letting your things
go,
move along and go is actually important.
I think there's actually, because we're cramming more and more people into less and less space, aren't we? A lot of the big houses are being divided up into smaller flats, that kind of thing. And so if you're one of those people who's got a lot of stuff hanging around, either in boxes, on shelves, that sort of thing, rather than either throw it out or give it to a regular charity shop, you could think about taking it down to Broad Street. Now, do you expect people to sort of bag stuff up in black bin bags, that sort of thing, wash it before they bring it?
Well, surely it's nicer this way, but once again, nothing is obligatory. Free Shop is completely free platform, which is, once again, there are different people, different approaches, and I always wash the stuff personally, which I'm giving to the Free Shop. Actually, sometimes I take something which is nice, but once again, not really in the best shape, and try to bring it back to life and then bring it back to the shop.
Do you ever find that some of the other shops who are selling things for quite a lot of money around you look down on the Free Shop?
Actually, they're not. But a lot of people actually are surprised. How is it possible that things can be there for free? Well, it is there for free because we, Rita and Ed, who are running Arc Bar, have provided us with the space to do that.
That's lovely, yeah.
And it is all run by volunteers who doesn't get paid. So it's self-sufficient. It doesn't cost to run much, so it is there. To be honest, I think even in a future communities, once again, think about every person in a house have a hammer. How many hammers in a certain part of town are used at one time?
Well, quite often people have two hammers or three hammers.
Two or three hammers, which they use like once or twice a year. It would make sense to have like tool shops which people could share. And other things. There are a lot of, some of the things are really personal.
But what would happen to consumerism then?
Yeah, it was probably a bit collapse.
Yes,
but
okay.
People have this consumerism frame of mind now, but I hope in the future it won't be that way, and this is why I'm involved with the Free Shop, because I think it's helps people to use the resources more efficiently.
Okay, just remind us where it is and when it's open again.
Yes, Free Shop is situated on a broad street, which is between Wine Street and Nelson Street, and it's open every Friday and Saturday, roughly from 1 till 4. Also, we have a Facebook page. If anybody of you are on Facebook, it's Bristol Free Shop. Please like us and share and check in for seeing what's new going on. We're going to be getting on with some more artistic projects. As I mentioned, upcycling, yeah, it's trendy. And if you need something and you're in a good mood, come around, and there is a big chance you're actually going to find it there for free waiting for you.
Okay. Irina Bondaruk, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
That's all for this week. Dialect's Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast and is on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 a.m. every Monday morning. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectsradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, the Transpersonals and Irina Bondaruk this week, and also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialect's a Bristol Broadband Co-op production, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 or at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
Just call him the Pied Piper. So I know you wanna see Jimmy Z on the FLUTE, yeah.
All I want to do is play my fucking flute for you. All I want to do is play my fucking flute for you. Sound that's going down, nigga saying that Jimmy Z is the one you like to see on the FLUTE, yeah.
All I want to do is play my fucking flute for you.
Listen to the sounds of the funky flute.
Yeah. All I want to do is play my fucking flute for you.
The M, the M, the Y. Yeah, you know what time it is.
All I want
getting the job done.
Drum and bass style on Kiss.